You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, we speak to Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems, which is a payment solutions provider through the electronic data capture terminals, as well as through virtual means. We continue with a discussion on the far-reaching impact of fintech payments and a cashless society. Good morning, Danny. Thanks for joining us. First of all, I'd like to address the sudden departure of your ex-CEO, Raj Lawrence, in November 2016, citing family commitments. You were then appointed to take his position just recently in December. How is the company dealing with this transition, especially when we're facing quite exciting times in fintech?
Good morning, Julian. Basically, Raj is actually staying on as an executive director as part of the so-called handover plan and for at least for next few months. So he's actually serving, doing handover as well as serving as an advisor to the myself and to the whole group.
And it's also a natural progression for you from the COO to the CEO position. Do you find that there are drastic changes in your duties?
Frankly, not really. It's just about coverage. As you can see, I've done from COO and CEO for Malaysia, and the role before this was a group head for strategic planning. So in that role, basically on the strategy side, you know, I've been pretty much accustomed to on the group level. It's just getting into some of the more nitty-gritty financial operation stuff that I need to get my hands on to it.
Okay, just let's have a quick look at your latest financial results. The total value of e-pay transaction rose about 10% to about 2.7 billion ringgit in the 9 months of 2016. And this is about a 10% year-on-year rise. Now, this seems small to me compared to the overall addressable market, which some numbers have it at between 150 to 200 billion ringgit as a whole for the value of transactions in Malaysia. Are you satisfied with where GHL is? I mean, 2.7 billion against an addressable market of 150 to 200 billion ringgit.
You're talking specifically about ePay?
ePay,
which is
that's
the
right.
Top up and bill payment
that's right,
part,
yeah.
Not the payment side, right? Okay.
Oh, so what you're alluding to is that there is a larger payments pie.
Yes, basically there's two parts. ePay basically is, what we do in ePay is basically mobile prepaid reload, online games and bill payments and touch and go reload. That's the ePay part of the business, right? Then there's actually the GHL part of the business, which I call, which is purely payment, credit card payment, debit payment, and other, what we call it, alternative payment methods. So there's two parts to the business. So usually for the ePay side, we will measure against what's the telco prepaid base and what's the collectible amount on bill payments, let's say from the likes of Tenaga to TM, etc. So it's payment, but it's slightly different from the electronic payment of credit card and debit cards.
So one of the things that you have did is also that you have tied up with CIMB Bank to be a provider of payment services. And your job is to contact merchants on behalf of CIMB. Is this an uphill task considering that there are many players out there, for example, Alipay, PayPal, and even the traditional credit card companies?
Okay, I think the uphill task has passed. Meaning getting CIMB and like Global Payment as well to be our main acquiring bank, right? And fine-tuning the process of doing it. But now approaching the actual merchants is actually much, much easier because we are able to not only offer credit card, we are also directly appointed by Bank Negara to do my debit transactions in Malaysia, right? Plus, we also offer e-pay services on top of it. So what I'm doing now is basically my merchant sales team will go to the merchant and say, hey, we are not just one service, which is credit card. We are offering multiple services, which is e-pay, credit card payments, as well as debit payments. In Thailand, which we partner with Bangkok Bank and Thanachart Bank to do the same thing, as well as Alipay. So we are actually acquiring for merchants for Alipay in Thailand.
What would you say are your competitive advantages? Because not only have you tied up with banks, but you also have tied up with telco companies where you're in charge of the prepaid top-up facility. Why can't these people deal with the public directly? Could you give us an idea what your competitive advantages are?
Our USC is primarily multi-products. I go to a merchant, as mentioned. We have the ePay products, which I can do top-up prepaid bill payments, as well as credit card payments. If you prefer a certain bank, we can provide to you. We can do direct debit. In certain countries like Thailand, we have other products called Alipay, right? And more will come. In addition to that, it's our speed to getting things approved as well as getting the EDC or the terminal installed is within 10 to 12 days, which is unheard of in the market. And to me, the last thing is trust. Being listed helps a lot because technically the money, the settlement money comes to GHL and GHL settles with the merchant. So if there's no trust in GHL, a merchant would be worried whether his money will come to him.
On the Breakfast Grill today is Danny Leong, CEO of GHL System. Now, Danny, this speed of 10 to 12 days approval of your customer has to be looked at in the light of the category in which you're in, which is that you're a third-party acquirer and you own what is called all the merchant relationships, plus the fact that you have to perform this task of credit and risk assessment. How much of your company's resources do you put into doing this well, and does it involve the hiring of expensive staff?
I won't call them expensive. I'll call them very skilled and experienced staff. Yes, we do. We actually get a lot of this stuff from the banks, who actually knows how to underwrite risks, how to underwrite merchants, right? And also some of the merchant salespeople who actually know how to sell, quote-unquote, our services to the merchants.
So these are like analysts, isn't it? Why would the banks want to help you out by lending you their staff when they can do it directly?
It's all about serving the lower tiers of the tier 4 and tier 3 and tier 4 merchants, which traditionally the banks are actually more focused on the tier 1 and tier 2, you know, the big brands and all. So, and they may not have the capacity or the cost efficiency to do the lower tier merchants, which we have. Cost efficient meaning because the lower tier merchant arguably will be lesser transaction volume. Hence, you make less from it, but we are offering multi-service. So I'm making money from multiple services, not just traditional credit card, which typically a bank would do.
Today on The Breakfast Grill is Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems Berhad. Coming up next, we'll continue the conversation on fintech and a cashless society. This morning on The Breakfast Grill is Danny Leong, CEO of GHL System Berhad, a company that deals with electronic payments. Danny, recently you announced, in the middle of 2016, you announced the intention to go into Philippines and to tie up with a Philippines bank to offer e-payment services. How big is Philippines to your overall business? And why are they giving business to a foreign company rather than to a local player?
Basically, in my view, Philippines is actually a bigger market than Malaysia. And it's actually at a very infant stage compared to Malaysia, right? Meaning to say that the unbanked market is huge, right? And credit card is still on the low compared to Malaysia acceptance as well. So it's a huge market for us. So we have signed up with RCBC Bank in, I think, middle of last year. And we have since then started our TPA business with them. And we will fine-tune the process naturally when you start a new so-called service. But we have done fairly well. We have done about 1,005 new merchants within the 5-6 months period. So that will continue to be our big growth path in the years to come. In fact, I do think that it will be even bigger than Malaysia, right? Sheer size of the merchant base.
Given the attraction of the market over there, why don't they go with a local? Why do they have to go with a foreigner like GHL?
Basically, it's to me, it's down to trust, as I mentioned, because I don't think there's any player in ASEAN, as an ASEAN player, that would have actually is listed and has the capability, the whole machinery mechanism to do the underwriting and the actual settlement for all these merchants.
Are you saying that you have no competitors around the region?
In ASEAN perspective, as an ASEAN player, we have competitors in segments, meaning I've got competitors in the internet space, internet payment space, and they just do internet. I've got competitors who are just doing MPOS, and just doing MPOS, right? But we are actually a totally full solution provider in terms of from the traditional terminals to MPOS to internet and even services like ePay.
So I think when you talk about this kind of role, it seems like the banks are outsourcing some of the processes to you.
Correct.
How do you intend to expand further into the fintech area? Because your predecessor, Raj Lorenz, was quoted in press reports as saying that GHL wants a slice of the fintech business.
Okay. Basically, how we're going to continue to grow is in two ways. One is basically geographic expansion. Okay, we have got started Indonesia in 2016, and we're looking at three more countries within the next 2 years. Right, that's one form of expansion. Therefore, expansion is basically be able to do other what I call payment types, other services. Today, we only know it as credit card and debit card services. We are going into things like, as I mentioned, Alipay, the wallet based, what we call the wallet based payment services, right? Which is, I believe, is going to be the next wave. We're also looking at other fintech products like micro loans, which we would want to play a role in it. Why we can play a role in it? Because there'll be a lot of new products coming out from fintech, right? But who has the merchant relationship? We do.
Are you in a position to also get the required and relevant regulatory approvals?
Depends on the product type. Some of it is actually the regulation is obtained by the product owner, meaning the principal, right? Let's say P2P lending. They will get their own approval, but we are just doing a so-called outsourced role, quote-unquote.
Okay.
Right? So for those cases, potentially no.
What about
for cases we need, we will do so.
I mean, when you talk about something like micro-lending, that would be under the purview of Bank Negara, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think SC as well is given out the 6 licenses, if I'm not wrong.
For P2P?
Yes.
Okay, and also Bank Negara Governor Dato Muhammad Ibrahim noted that banks would stand to lose out on 30 to 40% of the profits through the growth of the fintech industry. Do you agree with this?
I actually don't think they'll lose out in terms of the absolute amount, because the whole idea of this is to push transaction volume through in an electronic manner.
But the Bank Negara governor is talking about a very specific issue, which is the profits of the bank to the extent of 30 to 40% of their profits. And I'm just wondering whether at some point, whether these fintech companies will cross swords with the banks in certain segments. For example, you just mentioned P2P payments and so on, which means that certain areas you would see fights and skirmishes between fintech companies that are newly set up and that are being branded as disruptors to the very traditional models of the banks.
Yes, I do agree with that, actually. Depends how successful they are. But yes, they will give the banks a run for their money. And but I think it's good competition, because basically it helps the banks to actually start looking into this new kind of fintech space as well. As you know, most of the banks actually set up their own fintech divisions already, and trying to incorporate some of these things, these services in. Yes, there will be competition, but I think the main thing is basically to grow consumption.
So would you say that banks are your friends or are they your competitors?
Partners.
Partners.
Definitely partners.
And when you say that banks are your partners, which means that the banks are backing you, this will still contain elements of vested interest of the old way of doing things, which is very seen to be very costly to the consumers. Is this true disruption in the sense of what the motive and the DNA of the fintechs is supposed to be, right? In that they're supposed to disrupt the high-cost financial products and, you know, disrupt that for the benefit of the consumers?
I think it's disruptive. Imagine in the, let's say, just about simple credit card payment.
But if, let's say, if you're bank backed, right? How can it be disruptive? Because you're still going to be working for the bank, and you're still within that ecosystem where you go to bed together with the banks.
Disruptive. What I mean disruptive in a way, because is to me is liberalization of payment acceptance to the very small segments in an emerging market. Meaning to say is that it's like your Australia and UK, where everybody accepts payments, right? So, but in ASEAN, it's not. So it's disruptive in a way that basically it liberalizes everybody, you know, just use cards to pay or use your phone to pay. That's disruptive, right? And if you were to do it the traditional way, just the bank doing the acquiring, they will probably just focus on the tier one, tier two. So there's no disruption there.
Do you have any licenses or any intention to go into the e-wallet and e-money business?
One of our subsidiaries actually has an e-wallet license. That was actually, we started this venture during the e-pay days. And basically, we did it mainly to learn the issuing space, right? We have not invested that much in it, mainly to actually learn from a technology standpoint, from the merchant acceptance standpoint.
So you're not very serious in
expanding and
developing that business?
No. Our main business is still to do acquiring, not so much of issuing.
What do you think about people who have such licenses? Like, for example, we recently interviewed ManagedPay and they obtained that license for e-wallets from Bank Negara. Do you think that such companies are beginning to take on very much a bank-like characteristics and the banks in future would not be very happy about it?
I think their intention is to do that, to take over some of the bank deposits, so to speak, right? Like what Alipay does in China. But I think it's not an easy task to do.
Why is that?
Because once you start doing issuing, mainly you need to acquire consumers. When you acquire consumers, you need a lot of marketing budget.
But aren't you also in the business of acquiring consumers? Because you are, in a way, acquiring merchants. But by acquiring merchants, these are also representatives of consumers, right?
Yes and no, it's different because it's businesses. So basically, it's the cost of acquiring and what I can get from a merchant is going to be more than from a consumer standpoint. Basically, there are, well, let's say I think Malaysia probably has 600,000 merchants or businesses.
So right. I just compared need to tens of millions
correct.
Of consumers.
Correct. So when I acquire, assuming this whole ecosystem, I've still got 600,000 that I would have acquired, not that 30 million that we have in Malaysia. So that, to me, that's a big difference.
Of course, one of the very big users of such e-payments and fintech and so on would be the SMEs. And SMEs are also very important to your business. What is the cost for SMEs to adopt your technology compared to going with the banks directly?
The cost is pretty much similar, all right, I would say, in terms of MDR, the MDR rates, rentals, it's, to me, it's pretty much
Can you give
simpler.
Us some numbers? Like if I'm an SME and I want to buy into one of his systems, okay. How much would it take for me to start up?
Okay, basically, we'll have to give a deposit of about, I think, 700 ringgit for the EDC and probably processing fee of 100 to 200. And that's about it.
Okay, 700 ringgit seems quite prohibitive. Unless you're an SME with revenues of tens of millions of ringgit, that's fine. But with the new online revolution and digital businesses where people think of a business overnight and they want to start it up the next day, do you think 700 ringgit would be too prohibitive to tap into this segment of the internet economy that is up and coming?
Frankly, I don't think so, because if you want to start a business and you can't afford 700 ringgit.
Yeah, but we're talking about the huge market in micro businesses. I mean, you earlier were talking about going into the micro lending business, but the micro business can also involve very speedy startups from small internet companies. And would you say that 700 ringgit would be a prohibitive cost to them?
For the very micro one, we have the MPOS option, which is basically you actually buy the device. And that is going to be, I believe it's about 400 plus, right? I think the key to these merchants, the very micro ones, is actually the other component of the charge, which is, I forgot to mention, which is a monthly rental that we will charge the merchant for the EDC service. So when you go to MPOS, basically just acquire that device from us one time, and basically they don't have to pay rental and they can actually start their very small business.
Okay, 400 ringgit still sounds a little bit expensive to me. I'm thinking of really disrupting the sector by, drastically reducing costs to something that is so seamless. For example, can you do away with the physical terminal, which costs money, and go into something that's totally virtual and drastically reduce the cost?
I'm not too sure what intel you have, but we're actually working on something like that, which I cannot reveal now.
But you do see that such services can be easily provided by people like PayPal and I don't know if Amazon has that kind of thing, but I saw a video on the Amazon Go business, Amazon Go supermarket, and the process is so seamless. Do you think that this will be the near future of e-payments?
I believe so. The challenges for this is actually how to get the security component into these transactions. There are reasons why people use EDC terminals,
right? Because of the security component that is imposed by MasterCard and Visa, right? But things are evolving very fast, and I do see that happening, that there will be a very micro segment that actually is probably going to be without any device.
How does that affect your investing strategy and your CapEx strategy? Do you need to, because of this breakneck speed that the internet is moving, that you need to factor in obsolescence at a very early stage?
From our perspective, not really. Why? Because we actually don't manufacture terminals. We actually work, we collaborate with partners and buy terminals from them. So basically, we buy as when we need it.
But so in terms of planning, is it disruptive?
Not really, because see, in reality, is terminals will continue to be here. It's just the number of them being out in the market, right? As you serve the market, I can't imagine a Tesco or a hypermarket not having EDC and just using mobile phones as an acceptance device. It's just not practical, right? You will still need certain devices, but for the mass micro market, that's where the new technology will start to serve them.
Thank you very much. And that was Danny Leong, CEO of GHL Systems, talking to us today about the future of e-payments and fintech. I'm Julian Ng for BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.